This show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Someone you like.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Okay, with Gene and Chris in the Paracast, as you know, we have a place in our forums at forum.theparacast.com called The Question Bank, where when we have time, we don't always have time, you can ask questions of our guests. Chris?
Well, we have a question for you. We were talking about, you know, just the concept of these mysterious craft crashing. And this question, Stan, comes from Greer's Meeting Planner. That's what he calls himself, from Sydney, Australia. He's been a member of the forum for almost a year. And he's wondering, given the advanced nature of a technology that could achieve interstellar travel, how likely do you think that it would fail upon arrival at Earth? Even our primitive flying Earth technology has redundant systems, and crashes are one in a million events. Surely the prospect of advanced systems failing so completely is preposterous. And then he's wondering about the, you were mentioning the radar explanation being used to describe the reason for the crash.
Let me correct the first impression here. I have not the slightest reason at all to think that what crashed came here directly, flying, being flown, if you will, from another solar system. I think we got motherships here. Remember that case out west, triangulation by a civil engineer, showed the thing was between 0.6 and 1.2 miles long. Loads of little Earth excursion modules on board. And we have in our own Navy, we have a direct analogy of that. The Navy has nuclear-powered aircraft carriers, big old monsters over 1,000 feet long, that carry about, 75 little airplanes. The carrier can operate for 18 years without refueling. And as far as I know, has never been observed to fly. Little airplanes can operate for, an hour, 2 hours? And they never operate on the water. They fly. Just the carrier never operates in the air. So we have a separate question, in other words. We cannot presume to give you a database, look at Ted Phillips' data on physical trace cases. He's collected like 5,000 of them from 80 countries. And all of these things are under 100 feet in diameter. Not 600, they're under 100 feet in diameter. And people have observed several objects coming out of a huge mothership, if you'll pardon the expression. So it is incorrect to assume that what crashed at Roswell or Kecksburg or any place else was an interstellar propulsion, it had an interstellar propulsion system. Just as the airplanes on board the aircraft carrier don't have the capability of carrying a bunch of little airplanes and of steaming full tilt for 18 years, which is quite remarkable, frankly, if you're a ship captain. So that objection does not hold water. It's based on a false assumption.
Let me ask you here. When this thing crashed, did they have people coming over and taking radiation readings to make sure there were no harmful amounts of radiation? What about checking for alien microbes and possible situations?
We have no idea. Nobody has ever published the results of the analysis of the wreckage, and I doubt if they were looking for microbes. You know, that makes no sense to me that would be your first concern. I think, Colonel Blanchard told Jesse to take with him the counterintelligence corps guy, Sheridan Cabot. Why? Because he was worried that these were spies from some other country. And it turns out, incidentally, the Russians did have spies at Los Alamos and a few other places. But because the Roswell, the 509th, was unique in the world, and I don't say that lightly, but remember, the Russians didn't test an atomic bomb until 1949. Our first ones were in 45, and it was the 509th that carried them, that set them off. in Operation Crossroads in 46. The 509th was in charge. The only group that had access to nuclear weapons in the world at the time of the crash. So, a very special group. And I can understand Blanchard's concern. I mean, New Mexico's so empty of people that you figure spies would camp out someplace and keep their eyes on it. You know, the guys with the, I won't say night vision goggles, but good binoculars checking on what's happening at Roswell. So, you know, let's get the concept square. This was a unique location on the entire planet Earth. What they did about it, we haven't seen any reports. I'm sure that ones were written. Can you believe that there weren't ones written? Come on, you know. And whether you agree with Kevin or myself, it isn't the point. Any information about what was going on there would have been classified for good reason.
But we have no indication that anybody in the recovery crews were equipped with the equipment to protect themselves from any possible radiation, or there's no mention of radiation.
Where would there be such a mention? I don't have any classified reports made by the guys who were involved in the recovery. Do you?
No, but there were witnesses that described the operation.
Where were these witnesses? The thing crashed out in the middle of nowhere. There was nobody living down the street. There wasn't a scout troop camped out there.
Or maybe because Mac Brazel wasn't suffering from radiation sickness, they assumed there was none.
Look, they had means for measuring. There's no question that the 509th could measure radiation, could use radiation detectors, because they were worried about their own systems. They had nuclear weapons on base. It was unique.
Well, so, there's meeting plans.
Now, when you mention biological stuff, that's probably another matter entirely. And remember, we don't have reports from the medical personnel, the biological team that examined the bodies. We don't know what measurements they made, what tests they ran on the flesh.
Yeah.
Is flesh a bad word to use? I don't know. But, you know, is the biological matter of aliens, should it be called flesh or not? I don't know. But what I'm saying is there's a big hole here. We don't have any of the reports, and there had to be plenty of them, that described the examination of the bodies, the examination of the pieces of metal. And, you know, people have asked me, what would you do if you knew about the crash? Well, I'd send a bunch of pieces to classified laboratories. My first question would be, what's this stuff made out of? And you don't tell the guy who gets it where it comes from. Let him think it's from a spy. Who knows? The second question, and when the guy comes back and says, let me give you a specific example here, which I think is a valid one as it happens. It's a combination of samarium and cobalt. Now, why the hell would anybody put those two things together? That's not your problem. You take it to other people, measure the electrical, magnetic, nuclear, thermal properties of this stuff. And the guy comes back and says, I don't know where you got this. This is a guy who's got a high-level security clearance working at a classified installation. I don't know where you got this stuff. But I measured the highest magnetic moment of any material I've ever measured, make a great permanent magnet. Well, umpteen years later, I'm doing a story. I did a weekly science commentary for CBC Radio here in Fredericton on new and better permanent magnet materials, a neodymium boron iron, and I'm making it up. And at the end of the article, it says the original work on samarium cobalt was done at Wright Air Development Center. And I'll bet I know what was responsible for that. They didn't say that. Hey, this came from a flying saucer. Not at all. But when I found out that the original work was done at Wright Air Development Center, then I'd say, oh, it makes sense. That's where the wreckage went. Somebody did some. I visited there many times, incidentally. I had a contract with the Air Force to analysis and evaluation of fast and intermediate reactors for space vehicle applications. One word left out, Soviet.
Let's not leave out any more words, but let's do our break. With Stanton T. Friedman, with Gene Steinberg, and with Chris O'Brien, who is not right now the grumpy one, you're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Are you worried about your mom or dad living alone in their house? Hi, I'm Joan London. Listen, I know how difficult it is to find senior care for someone you love. That's why I recommend a free service called A Place for Mom. They are the nation's largest senior living referral service. Call A Place for Mom today.
To receive free information on senior living communities in your area, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-704-6182.
A Place for Mom offers free one-on-one advice from local advisors and a personalized list of senior living communities you can visit. If you have questions about senior care for your mom or dad, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
Call A Place for Mom in the next 10 minutes to get your free ebook on financing senior care, as well as free information on senior living communities in your area. Call 1-800-704-6182. That's 1-800-704-6182.
Are your Google search results killing you? Unflattering content in blogs, news articles, online reviews, social media, or other sources can jeopardize your reputation, your business, and your livelihood. Let Reputation.com help. Our patented technology will make the truth about you more visible while pushing down unwanted negative content. Improve your Google search results. Call Reputation.com at 1-800-831-0771 for a free consultation. That's 800-831-0771.
My computer is so slow, it's making me crazy.
I used to have that problem.
Did you quit using the computer, or did you buy a new one?
No, I called Geeks On Site. They made an appointment to visit my home and showed up the same day.
You mean they didn't ask you to bring your computer to a shop? That's what happened when I called a support company.
Geeks On Site can go to your home, or business, or even repair your computer online. They have 24/7 emergency service.
If you're having problems with your PC or Mac, call Geeks On Site. 1-800-591-1682. Our friendly certified computer repair experts are available 24/7. Call now for a free diagnosis. 1-800-591-1682. Data recovery, virus removal, and maintenance for all laptops, desktops, printers, and networks. That's Geeks On Site for friendly certified computer repair experts, available 24/7 over the phone or in your home or business. Just call 1-800-591-1682. That's 1-800-591-1682. 1-800-591-1682.
Cancer categorizes over 100 diseases. Though we do not diagnose, treat, or cure cancer, GCN team is offering the Clemson University study where there was up to a 95% reduction in cancerous cells when exposed to a plant-derived mineral supplement. If you or a loved one are searching for answers to this horrifying disease, come to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. We'll email you a copy for free. That's 877-878-4203.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
You see, Chris is going to get more and more grumpy if I call him grumpy.
Well, here's a follow-up question from, and I love this name, Greer's Meeting Planner.
Okay.
We have some creative listeners.
Yeah.
And he's wondering about the explanation of radar bringing the craft down, and he's wondering what the source of this explanation is, and how on earth should we determine this as reason after the fact. I know the answer to this, but why don't you tell us about the radar units that were just going operational in New Mexico at the time?
Well, they were there to track rockets because White Sands Missile Range is where we were firing all kinds of captured German B-1s and B-2s and so forth. And what I have suggested is that there are very few places in the world that a piloted vehicle would encounter a powerful radar beam. Remember, this is 1947. And what I've suggested is, I wish to point out, that all the radars at that time, tracking radars and so forth, used vacuum tube equipment. And you don't turn it on at the last minute. You keep it warmed up. That's the way you did things. No solid-state stuff at that time, equipment to do any of that with. So if you suddenly pilot and a wingman, they encounter one of these radar beams. It's just sitting there aiming. It's not circling around. It's not like an airport radar going round and round. Your craft goes through the beam. What in the heck was that? And it discombobulates either the guidance or the propulsion system. Just a momentary glitch, if you will. And I would suggest it could have resulted in a mid-air collision. With one going one way, and I talked to an Air Force general, if you have a mid-air collision, are the results the same for both vehicles usually? No, he told me. He was a pilot during World War II, flew a lot of hours. Went on to command, General Exxon, went on to command Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, matter of fact. And usually one makes it and one doesn't. And so one of the interesting things in my first conversation with Jesse Marcel was that he felt there had to have been a mid-air explosion. And why was that? He said because of the huge amount of land covered by the wreckage. I mean, it was spread out all over the place. And because there was no crater. He'd seen planes go down in World War II in the Pacific. I said, I didn't talk about him following in with a machine gun or anything like that. And if a plane goes in and it's got fuel on board, it can make a big hole in the ground. And it wasn't any crater at Roswell. And so it makes sense to me that the stuff was spread out over, you know, a quarter mile this way, two-thirds of a mile that way, because there was a mid-air explosion. It makes sense. Now, what could cause it? Well, you had a collision. You try to keep it aloft, and the pilot finally, you know, can't manage it. And so one comes down, that's the Plains of San Augustine. One explodes in midair and spews the pieces. It's probably a crew compartment that's over there, separated from the stuff that exploded. I mention that only because we know that there was a launch of a rocket scheduled and that the radar would have been on. You know, not an unreasonable explanation. So can I prove it happened? No, of course not.
I want to go back to what I asked you earlier, and we kind of got carried away with a lot of the intimate details of Roswell. Are there things about the case at all that you've come to disbelieve over the years?
I certainly don't believe everything everybody has said about Roswell. There's a lot of baloney put out all over the place. Or, you know, people who claim to have... I have trouble with, what the heck was her name? The woman who was playing with pieces in the military of wreckage. She was given it to play with, which I find, you know, her father was a fireman. I have trouble with her story. I can't imagine the state highway patrolman. I mean, the highway patrolmen in New Mexico were well aware there was a lot of government-sponsored classified activity around there. You know, that's not an unreasonable comment when you've got two nuclear weapons labs, you've got all kinds of rockets being fired and all the rest of it. And when you have the group, the 509, sitting there in Roswell. So I have trouble with her story about giving stuff to play with and a guy comes out and threatens everybody. They'll be picking you out of the desert and all this kind of stuff. I had a real problem with that story and still do.
How about Glenn Dennis and the mystery nurse?
Well, I tried to find the mystery nurse, and I didn't have much luck with it. And I don't know what to say about that. Again, absence of evidence. I tried a lot of Catholic schools in the Midwest where she was supposedly from. I was one of the first people that Glenn told his story to. And so I'll put a question mark on some of that testimony. Okay?
Well, that's pretty important information in terms of determining that there were occupants because, of course, for some of the new listeners to the show, Glenn Dennis was the mortician, I think, in the area and was asked to supply small child-sized coffins.
Well, he was asked about the availability of them, and he told them he knew where he could get it and could get some. There was a company, I think it was in Amarillo, where they got their child-sized coffins from. But I was the first to hear his story. And I was favorably impressed because I talked to other people in town, what they thought about Glenn. I talked to Walter Hout, with whom I had a great deal of faith. And so, you know, there's a good example, Walter Hout. He was the public information officer. And when Joe Nickel, Dr. Joe Nickel, 3 degrees in English, but the scientific consultant to the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal, he tried to say that an unknown PR guy put out an unauthorized press release. And I said, you don't even know his name? Well, no. Of course, it was in all of the books that had been written prior to that.
Ouch.
And, you know, but also, that underplays Walter's role in the sense that he was a World War II bombardier, flew more than 20 missions over Tokyo, or Japan, I shouldn't say over Tokyo, over Japan. Furthermore, Walter was such a good bombardier that he was selected to drop the instrument package over one of the two bombs tested in Operation Crossroads in the Pacific in 1946. You pick your best guy because if you don't get any data, the instrument package, what's the point in doing the test?
There is a point in having these announcements, and then we'll be back with Stanton Friedman, who will continue his response. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
By now you know that wireless technology like cell phones do in fact pose dangers to the health and privacy of everyone. Lockit Pocket's wide range of products are unmatched in providing the protection you deserve. No scare tactics, just common sense. LockitPocket.com offers quality American-made options to alleviate and eliminate these invisible dangers. Learn more at LockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. LockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.
Would you like to receive $250 to $1,000 cash per day? Go to richmoneyrich.com. No website, no selling, no explaining. Just take these simple two steps and go to richmoneyrich.com. You can be generating cash in the next 24 hours simply using this system. Good news is, it runs on 100% autopilot, and you don't need any experience to get started. It's easy. Get your share of easy riches and go to richmoneyrich.com. That's richmoneyrich.com. Go now. Brought to you by the Conservative Investor. Current returns not indicative of future results.
Dangerous blood clot device alert. If you or a loved one had an IVC filter placed to prevent blood clots from traveling to your heart or lungs and suffered an injury, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. The FDA warns that IVC filters may cause serious complications, such as heart or lung damage, internal bleeding, and even death. These dangerous blood clot devices can break, and the metal fragments can travel to your heart or lungs, causing serious injuries. If you or a loved loved one suffered organ damage or other injuries from an IVC filter, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk at 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507.
This is an advertisement. Paid non-attorney spokesperson. InjuryHelpDesk.com is responsible for this advertisement. Principal Office, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hi, I'm 54 years of age, and at Christmas time last year, a resident I take care of at work accidentally rolled over my right foot with his motorized scooter. I was backed into a corner, and he put it in reverse and did it again. The bones in my foot weren't actually broken, but damage was done. The remedy was to just let the foot heal on its own, and this was expected to take many weeks. As a caregiver, I do a lot of walking, and I was sort of okay when I was in motion. It's when I stopped to rest that I really felt the pain. The pain was there getting out of bed in the morning too. So I got on the One World Way at Lewis Beck, and I just had to write this testimony. No more pain. Nothing. I can only attribute this to the One World Way, since I haven't introduced anything else into my life. This product is a true godsend. It gives me energy and did whatever magic this stuff does to heal my poor foot. I will take One World Way for life. Sincerely, Holly.
Call 888-988-3325 or visit OneWorldWay.com. That's OneWorld, W-H-E-Y.com.
Did you know a dirty CPAP system can make you sick? If you knew what could be growing in your mask and hose, you might not sleep so well. But now, SoClean.com has released the world's first and only automated CPAP cleaner and sanitizer. It kills 99.9% of all CPAP germs, and it's completely hands-free. For a limited time, you can try SoClean risk-free for 30 days. Just call 1-800-900-0684.
SoClean changed the CPAP experience for the better. My health has improved. It's simple to use, and I'm not worried about infections.
SoClean destroys CPAP bacteria, viruses, and germs with no hassle. Never have to clean your machine by hand again. There's no water, chemicals, or disassembly. Just pop in your mask, close the lid, and presto, your CPAP system is clean and fresh in minutes. Call SoClean.com to try it risk-free at home for 30 days. This is a limited-time offer, only available by calling 1-800-900-0684. That's 1-800-900-0684.
Hello, this is John Burroughs, one of the witnesses to the Rendlesham UFO incident. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We have Stanton Friedman joining Gene and Chris in the Paracast this week, and we started in on Roswell, kind of giving an update from Stan because of his skeptical comments that we heard from Kevin Randall last week. Stan, you want to continue your response from the last segment, or should we move on?
Well, let me just comment that anybody who's going to talk about what happened at Roswell in terms of the recovery and so forth and doesn't mention that it was the most elite military group in the world. And I've had people say, oh, Colonel Blanchard was a loose cannon. Sure, he got promoted to four-star general several steps along the way and was vice chief of staff of the Air Force when he died of a massive heart attack. Now, you don't get those promotions and that job, and at one time head of operations for Strategic Air Command, where he had thousands of nuclear warheads under his command. This is years later now. Not that we didn't have thousands of nuclear warheads at the time of Roswell. We had a few. But if you don't mention the relevant information, Blanchard was not only a West Pointer, but with that kind of background, his New York Times carried his obituary, which doesn't happen for every general. It goes along with a big one, too. So when you try to minimize the good side of the story, were these people competent? You're darn right they were. And you don't get four more promotions from Colonel to four-star general without approval from Congress on each one of them, incidentally.
Long and short of it is, after all these years, is there any hope, absent some kind of disclosure from the government, of learning much more about Roswell?
Unless somebody turns up and you said absent disclosure, well, maybe somebody kept a report, a document that's sitting in somebody's drawer.
Some of the metal might be nice.
Well, I was going to say, I'd also like to see a piece of metal that I could have analyzed and stuff like that. But I don't expect that to happen, really. And there's something else going on here, too. The guys involved were World War II veterans. Security was taken very seriously. Loyalty, patriotism, all these things were not dirty words. This was not the Vietnam War that they were in. It was World War II. I often point out that from an alien viewpoint, we're a primitive society whose major activity is tribal warfare, that in World War II, we nice guys managed to kill, there's a dispute, some people say 50 million of our own kind, others have said 60 million, but I'll be conservative. Me? Yes, only 50 million people. We destroyed 1,700 cities. There were bombing raids with 500 airplanes dropping bombs over places in Europe. And then after the war, this shocked some people, we exploded 2,000 nuclear warheads, 2,000 plus a few. And people look at me, what do you mean? We didn't explode. Yes, we did. Only two were on people, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But there were a lot of other atom bombs exploded. So anybody coming here would say, holy cow, let's make sure these people don't take their brand of friendship out our way.
Well, either that or they were already here and we were putting them in harm's way because we were popping off atomic weapons.
Well, I think it would have been the job of the Galactic Federation Security Command. How's that for a nice title? Sounds like science fiction. Certainly, they would be wary of any place where there were nuclear weapons. And one of the things that's changed since I started the noise about Roswell back in 78, which seems forever ago.
Yeah, and we can blame it on you.
One of the things that's changed drastically is our concept of how many solar systems there are, how many planets there are, what's the chance of there being anybody else out there. Frank Drake, a SETI guy, radio telescopes, etc., at one point said there might be as many as 8,000 planets that could be in our galaxy that could be sending signals to us. Wow! Well, now, thanks to Kepler, the general consensus, and I checked with a couple of astronomers, something on the average of 1 to 1.6 planets per star. Planets per star. Holy cow, the galaxy has a couple hundred billion stars. But even look at our local neighborhood. Within 100 light years of here, there are approximately 10,000 stars. That means 10,000 planets within a measly 100 years. And you get all kinds of people saying, well, the nearest civilization would have to be 1,000 light years away or 800 light years away or 2,000 light years away. My goodness. Look at the star map work having to do with the Betty and Barney Hill case. There you've got two stars. They're an eighth of a light year apart, 35 times closer than the sun is to the next star over. So our notion of how many beings, civilizations, bases, call them what you want, there are in the neighborhood, how do you define neighborhood on these kinds of things, has changed drastically thanks to the Kepler satellite. Nobody expected that they were going to find that many planets. And nobody's saying they all have life on them. You know, 1 out of 10, 1 out of 20, 1 out of 50. But let's allow for colonization and migration. I've asked audiences, kind of fun, at the end of my lecture, how many people had your ancestors back 4 generations living here, whatever town I happen to be in? And usually it's a very small number. Colonization, migration. You can't say what the future is by looking just at the past. How many people lived in Las Vegas 100 years ago, 120 years ago? Not many. So things have changed. Our concept of how important we are, that's one of the biggest things that's changed. There's Pat Robertson saying that all the intelligent life in the galaxy is on planet Earth. And all this UFO stuff is the work of the devil. And the world was created in 4004 B.C. And I wouldn't even say Pat's entitled to his opinion. I don't think he is if he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, there's tour operators that go up to Grand Canyon that are creationists, and I love to sit there and listen to them explain how the canyon was formed in just a couple of days, and it only happened, a few thousand years ago. I just... It's very difficult for me to keep my mouth shut. But you did bring up the Betty and Barney Hill case. And, of course, that's where we have our first real mention of Zeta Reticuli as being a possible player in this whole UFO scenario.
It was Marjorie Fish's work. The event took place in 1961. So.
Right. And she looked at the star map. Well, Sandinista, who's one of our posters, who comes up with great questions for our guests, where he posts at the question bank at forum.theparacast.com, and he says that recent investigations of Zeta Reticuli indicate that the star is likely to be surrounded by a debris disk rather than a planetary system. He's wondering if you still believe that this is a prime candidate or a prime location for a possible nearby extraterrestrial civilization.
Well, it's 39 light years away, so that's not the nearest possible one at all. Nobody's saying it is. I still have, how shall I put this? I would put it on my list of probable places, and I knew I was the first to publish about Marjorie Fish's work about the star map. And I was very impressed by the care with which she did her work, her objectivity. As a matter of fact, she'd been a school teacher. And through somebody I knew who knew somebody else, she wound up being a technician at Oak Ridge National Laboratory and worked there for many years. She's a very bright lady, and not just because she was a member of Mensa, but objective, careful. Wow. I was very impressed. So, interesting, exciting, useful, and indicative of, just look at the difference. Two stars, 35 times closer to each other than the sun is to the next star over. Wow. And the other star is visible all day from a planet around the other star.
Let's get into more about that binary star system in our next segment with Stanton T. Friedman and Gene and Chris. You're in the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's L-E-M-K-E Soft.com. LemkeSoft.com. L-E-M-K-E Soft.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
This is an alert. If your business or church is building this year, you're about to pay more than you should. This could mean thousands of dollars more for your office, retail space, church, or warehouse. A General Steel building can save you as much as half the cost and time of similar conventional construction. And we're offering rebates of up to $20,000 to help you build today. Call General Steel for free information that could save you thousands. Call 866-91-STEEL.
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 A good stove is at the top of the list for any serious survivalist. That's why you have to see the full range at emberlit.com. Simple, elegant, but extraordinarily efficient. Available in titanium or stainless steel, the Emberlit line of stoves are ultralight, pack flat, and work great. Fueled only by sticks and debris, from emergency situations to long-term survival, Emberlit stoves are up to the task. Emberlit, the most convenient, easy-to-carry wood stoves on the planet. See them all at emberlit.com.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-403-4885. That's 1-800-403-4885. 1-800-403-4885. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health issue and company and other factors. Not available in all states.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
Hey, this is Marie D. Jones, the author of This Book is from the Future, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We'll have more to say about this in our second radio show after the Paracast. Now, how do you hear that show? Well, it's not streamed online at iTunes. It's only available to subscribers of the Paracast Plus. To learn more about the Paracast Plus, and we also offer the ad-free version of this show with higher quality audio and more, go to plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com. Our guest this week is Stanton Friedman. Stan, you had any further response to that question before we go on?
Oh, about the qualities of those two, Zeta 1 and Zeta 2, whether there's a, what did you call it? A debris disk? You called it
something. It was surrounded by debris, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't have any further comment. And, you know, we tend to forget how much we have learned. For example, one of Marjorie's most difficult problems was getting accurate distance data on the stars, because the astronomers don't care. You need two angles to aim a telescope, and whether it's 20 light years away or 30 light years away, it doesn't matter. You're not going anywhere. That's the astronomer approach. Then the Hipparco satellite was launched by the European Space Agency, and they made, I don't know, I've heard numbers like a million measurements of stellar distances. And so finally we've got accurate data on where the stars, how far the stars are. Which, in the early days, you could pick up three different star catalogs and get three different distances.
Yeah.
You know, so it was awkward. And we've got more to learn, and I don't think there's many people studying it, to tell you the truth. I wish there were, because I've heard contradictory stories about Zeta Reticuli, for that matter. And, you know, what's truth and what's fiction? I don't know. Happy to admit that.
Are you familiar with Breakthrough Starshot? Spectre 73, one of our listeners, is wondering what you make of the recent announcement from Stephen Hawking regarding Breakthrough Starshot. For many years, we've been informed that travel to the nearest stars would be almost impossible. And he's wondering if you think that this could be the beginning of a change in attitude.
Well, I think there is a beginning of a change. But one of the problems is that the astronomers seem to know nothing about three areas of importance in this discussion. One is data about UFOs. Look for the references in their books, and there's darn few. The second is about interstellar travel. And these guys seem to think that all research gets done in academic surroundings and gets published in refereed scientific journals. And that's nonsense. Well, let me give you an example. A guy made a calculation, 1941, I think it was, Dr. Campbell, an astronomer, who calculated the required initial launch weight of a rocket able to get a man to the moon and back. 1,000,000 tons, he said. And it turns out the Apollo, you know, the Saturn vehicle, weighed 3,000 tons. He made every possible stupid assumption, you know, single-stage rocket, limited acceleration, everything possibly wrong. So I worked on fission propulsion systems, and we tested one very successfully, operated at a power level of 1,100 megawatts. Now, Hoover Dam produces 2,000 megawatts and is a huge monster if you've been out there. The NRX A6 is less than 7 feet in diameter, produced 1,100 megawatts. But Los Alamos operated the Phoebus 2B nuclear rocket reactor propulsion system at the nuclear test site outside Las Vegas, power level 4,400 megawatts. Exhaust temperature of the liquid hydrogen that went in very cold and came out very hot, over 4,000 degrees. Now, are universities involved in this? No, of course. So astronomers have made all kinds of silly statements about feasibility, about interstellar travel. Now, one of the problems is people want half an Einstein. I have tried this sneaky again, but sometimes I get on a campus and I'm going to do a colloquium in the afternoon, a physics colloquium, and I get warned by one of the students, Dr. Jones thinks you're full of baloney. So I make sure I talk about things that I know they don't know anything about, the electromagnetic submarine, the fission rockets, stuff like that. And then I ask some straightforward questions. What's the numerical equivalent of 1G for acceleration? 9.8 meters per second squared. They all know that, except it doesn't mean anything to anybody. Now, in more useful terms, it's 21 miles per hour per second. So if you've got a car accelerating at 1G, at the end of 3 seconds, it's going 63 miles an hour. That's a pretty hot car. Most cars take 5, 6, 7 seconds to get there. Then I ask, all casual, what's the speed of light? 300,000 kilometers per second. Okay, now the question is, do you have a better unit than that? Sure, 670 million miles an hour. But the real question is, how long does it take at 1G to get close to the speed of light? Multiple choice, gentlemen. 1,000 years, 100 years, 10 years, 1 year. You'd be surprised how many professors and students pick 1,000 years or 100 years or 10. A few get the right answer, which is just 1 year. And so they're understanding fusion propulsion. Now, every astronomer knows that all the stars produce their energy by nuclear fusion. There are many different fusion reactions, but involving hydrogen and helium, two most lightest and most abundant substances in the universe, which is very convenient, frankly. You're not going to find much uranium out there, but plenty of hydrogen and helium. And so the kicker is, it takes less than a year at 1G to get close to the speed of light. At 99.99% of the speed of light, time slows, that's the other half of the conundrum, time slows down for things moving that fast. And how much it slows down is dependent on how close to the speed of light you're moving. And incidentally, the particles of the Large Hadron Collider move at 99.9999% of the speed of light. But at just 99.99% of the speed of light, you can go 37 light years in 6 months pilot time. Pilot time. You go out, go back, marry your granddaughter's best friend. Time slows down for things moving fast. And don't ask me why. That's the way God created the universe. How's that? Pat Robertson would like that answer, wouldn't he?
Oh, no. Hey, UFOs, believers should be stoned. The firmament is for man. The heavens are for the Creator, God. Of course, he failed to mention that he bounces all his 700 club signals off satellites.
Oh, you're kidding. They don't do that. They wouldn't use such ungodly techniques, would they? Yeah, right. As a matter of fact, they would. No, what I have found over the years is that astronomers really don't know anything about advanced propulsion. Look, I worked on a study of fusion propulsion when I was at Aerojet General Nucleonics under John Luce, an outstanding expert on fusion, back in 1962. It looked like if you wanted to spend the dough, you could go. How's that for a motto for a program? You could go to the stars. Is it easy? No, but, you know, progress comes from doing things differently. It took Magellan, his ship, 3 years to go around the planet. It takes the space station 95 minutes. But it is not a big sailboat. Progress comes from doing things differently. And most of that work gets done outside of academia. You know, I'm not knocking all academics. I've got a couple degrees myself from the University of Chicago, which I'm proud of, I guess. But if you're going to talk about interstellar travel, let's do some homework. You know, let's not assume you're stuck with a 50-year-old technology. Well, I don't use a slide rule anymore as an example of that.
Exactly. What is Breakthrough Starshot? This was a term that Spectre 73 mentioned, and it had Stephen Hawking attached to it. What is Breakthrough Starshot? Do you know?
No, although I've read some of Hawking's stuff, and also, what's his name, Milner, the Soviet billionaire. And they're talking about putting a small device up to a star, sending it to a star. I want to build a big one and go a lot faster. And there have been published studies by people working in the area, engineers and scientists, showing that interstellar travel is feasible. It's not cheap. And I'm not saying we should do it. God forbid, no. And anything that goes from our planet should represent all the countries on the planet. And the chance of that on a planet that's spending $1 trillion this year on things military, not very likely.
Hey, we got to do our break now, folks. We've got Gene and Chris with Stanton Friedman. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to DreamHost.com/radio, DreamHost.com/radio.
We use mobile devices right against our bodies every day, but growing scientific evidence has emerged showing serious health risks associated with exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The solution is Defender Shield, the most effective mobile radiation shielding ever developed. Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation from cell phones, tablets, and laptops, and starts at just $64.99. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. For 10% off, use promo code GCN. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in mobile radiation shielding.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.